Okay, so it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Nisha Hanif, who is on the faculty of the Department of Afro-American and African Studies and Women's Studies at the University of Michigan. Her work is located in the U.S., the Caribbean, and South Africa, and her focus is on race, gender, and health as a frame to conscientize her students about the relationship of these categories to social injustice. These projects have led her to interrogate the hegemony of science and the marginalization of women and race. And she's also the director of the Pedagogy of Action, which engages the students in a Freirean methodology of HIV and community empowerment. And I wish I had you in my back pocket during the last 30 years that we've been working on this. Can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Thank you for your introduction, and I'm very happy to be here.
It's very sensitive.
I'm very happy to be here, and you notice my background is red, so it doesn't mean it's going to be fire, but nonetheless. I want to thank Tamara for setting up this panel and for encouraging me to participate in this, and it's something about which I'm very passionate, which is the area of science and the products of science that affect women's bodies. So I will begin. Yes. The troubling nature of scientific projects which have developed technologies of disease and prevention and pregnancy prevention for women have essentially separated out women's bodies from women's agency. The pill, the convoluted and unfriendly design of the female condom and its expense does not promote women's autonomy. The pill does not prevent HIV and other sexually transmitted infections. It appears that it is the male condom that is the most effective device for women's protection. The deep contradiction of this ancient method at this moment is that women must negotiate condom use with men, thus putting their sexual safety in men's hands. These problematic technologies are a result of hundreds of years of science constructed by men, largely on male bodies, and then extrapolating this to women's bodies. Years of women scientists and women's voices being excluded from the scientific project. And today, even though there are great numbers of women doctors and scientists, the science itself has changed only marginally. The power of the paradigm of science and scientific research cannot be changed by the gender of the scientist, but by a revolutionary shift in putting women's bodies at the center of scientific discovery. Innovation is not possible when the language that presumes that science is indeed objective and that when talking about the body, that description and function is gender neutral. These issues are critical to public health practitioners since they must carry out and advocate for the result of the scientific projects as they affect gender and illness in the communities. Goal number one. Increase sex difference research in basic science. These are the goals that I'll be looking at. Goal number two, incorporate findings of sex gender differences in the design and application of new technologies, medical devices, and therapeutic drugs. And goal number six, employ innovative strategies to build a well-trained, diverse, and vigorous women's health research workforce. These issues are critical to public health practitioners since they must carry out and advocate for the result of the scientific projects as they affect gender and illness in the community. Goal number one. The separation of women's bodies from women's agency is evident in microbicides research. It is the failure of microbicide trials that generated basic science on the vagina. It was not until the microbicide tenofovir gel, which was found to be 39% effective, that enough was known about the vagina to find out about the safety and effectiveness. the complexity and intricacies of the vagina, not the cervix, not the ovaries, not the uterus, are now being more fully understood. The work being done in the NIH microbiome project is also important in this. The focus on women's reproductive organs can be seen in the Gray's Anatomy 2008. Now, I did not realize that Gray's Anatomy was known largely only as a television show. When somebody heard it was Grey's Anatomy, that's a TV show, and it did not occur to me that the show Grey's Anatomy was a riff on the actual textbook Grey's Anatomy, which every medical student all over the world must read. Anyway, so that is the thing that I was referring to. Okay, the section on the vagina has almost two paragraphs of text. The rest of this 25-page section is entirely devoted to the cervix, the uterus, and the ovaries. That the vagina is far more than the passage for the child and the location for the male sexual organ is not premised in this text. S.F. Wood et al. Recommended that the OWHR partner with agencies and offices that approve medical school curricula to broaden the women's health research basis of curricula for graduate training. The OWHR should not only look at the curricula but facilitate a project that examines elementary texts used in medical curricula as a separate project, since these texts will not be abandoned but continue to be used and additions made on the whim of the teachers. If the teacher is very oriented towards feminism, then that teacher will include certain things, but that's not in the text. Okay, further increased sex differences, I'm going to further discuss that. Increased sex difference research in basic science studies is another example of how language continues to infer that sex differences are an addition to basic science. That there is the basic science that is established, that is gender neutral, and sex difference discoveries will just fill in the difference gap. For example, I refer to the very NIH mission statement that Tamara referred to, which is to seek fundamental knowledge about the nature and behavior of living systems, and to apply that knowledge to enhance health, lengthen life, and reduce the burdens of illness and disability. To say we are all living systems is to re-inscribe the neutrality of science. But what I'm saying is that the whole of basic science needs to be re-examined, and that basic science for women's bodies, while sharing similarities with men's bodies, is to be placed as central. It is the similarities that should be marginal. Women's bodies being put at the center of science will generate a conception of science that is specific to women's bodies, and we should have in the end a basic science for women's bodies and a basic science for men's bodies. Now, this sounds really sort of elementary, but I think it's very important if you communicate the intentionality, and the intentionality, if you communicate it, will explore these differences in their as a general rule. In the book that Tamara referred to, Exploring the Biological Contributions to Human Health, Does Sex Matter?, Wiseman and Pardue allude to this idea, and they quote, "However, scientists have paid much less attention to the direct and international and intentional study of these differences. At the basic cellular and molecular levels, where data are available, they often have been a byproduct of other research. It's not been intentional." So I think goal number one should be changed this way. It should, instead of saying increase sex differences research in basic science, it should be changed to the following: to establish the foundational principles of basic science studies in women's bodies as separate from men's bodies. All I'm saying is that the intention is very important here. Then I will talk about goal number two, which is to incorporate findings of sex gender differences in the design and application of new technologies, medical devices, and therapeutic drugs. The one method which may resonate some agency for women in HIV prevention is the male condom. is a female condom, sorry. Many have complained about its design, and the proponents of this method have argued that we must support it because it is an available method women can use. But what we have is a device for women based in principle on the penis, which women do not have. The female condom is a flipped-out male condom. It is a man's body that is placed at the center of this innovation. The United Nations and WHO PATH have been supporting this device with funds and advocacy, and some reports have shown that the distribution level is very high. Regardless of its claimed virtues and recent changes, it is an unfriendly and difficult device, unfriendly to women's bodies, and still requires negotiation. The mammogram is devised on a male conception of the female breast. Apart from the suffering felt under this device, a small breast must always be contorted for the device. While this is both an issue of elementary sex difference and gender difference in devices, the ORWH cannot presume that a device that can work is enough. It must take into consideration women's agency. The devices must not be another burden for her physically and psychologically. Steve Jobs was not only clever at information technology, but information design and accessibility. It must be user-friendly, and we should not presume that because it is user-friendly, it is therefore a luxury. This is a necessary requirement, and user-friendly devices for women is a necessity, not a luxury. Goal number six. Employ innovative strategies to build a well-trained, diverse, and vigorous women's health research workforce. Henrik and Viscoli showed that only 9 out of 95 medical schools met their interdisciplinary criteria for a medical curricula. Perhaps the place that is doing the most in the area of women's health is the gender studies department. Even so, these are not hard scientific programs, but ones which take an increased awareness of gender differences and how those differences shape the health problems that women confront. Most of this, again, is in areas of reproduction, particularly childbirth alternatives. These are not classes on how research that drives scientific discoveries, particularly on women's bodies, how those discoveries are designed. However, the OWRH should capacity build women's studies departments as a site for both collaboration and advocacy within universities in building both a health research workforce, but a feminist eye that would ensure that women's bodies are put at the center of science. It's important to note that goal number four does allude to alliances. But what I'm trying to say here is that alliances do not have the capacity in the area of science, and it is this that must be included and inculcated in order to create an environment of innovation. Innovation is not possible when the language presumes that science is indeed objective, and that when talking about the body, that description and function is gender neutral. Again, I'm going back to Gray's Anatomy in chapter 56, which talks about the heart. It's called the heart and great vessels. It presents the heart as an entity separate from gender. Nothing in this chapter refers to sex differences. A student reading this will accept as a priority that gender is not important to this, when indeed this is not true. There must be in this chapter in particular information on gender differences which are now established scientifically. OWHR has already considerable information on sex differences must be included in all texts and curricula. The sex differences in heart disease are now well established. Why this is not a given in medical education is a colossal failure in this chain. This is a problem that OWHR should. I keep misusing that all the time, but on a fast track. And finally, while it is important to have these objectives and support ideas on establishing sex gender differences, there must be a real commitment financially to this project on women's health and a reapportioning of the amounts already committed. The Society for Women's Health Research has shown that in fiscal year 2010, the NIH budget was $31 billion. The ORWH's budget was $42.9 billion would be nice. The FDA's budget is $2.6 billion. The Office on Women's Health is $6 million. Now, I'm just going to say here that there's a lot of conflation in these areas between women and human. So while there were some things that will overlap in the FDA's budget and some things that will overlap in the NIH, there still is not enough money being spent on women's health research. So to summarize, I've suggested that there should be increased studies on the vagina, as in the NIH microbiome studies, and the ORWH should include examining and changing the basic text for medical students, which maintain the paradigm of scientific research, which excludes women's bodies. And we should change the objective one to read, to establish the foundational principles of basic science studies in women's bodies as separate from men's bodies. And again, I have the thing wrong. Already considered information on sex differences must be included in all texts and curricula. The sex differences in heart disease are now well established. Why this is not a given in medical education, it should be changed. And The ORWH cannot presume that a device that can work is enough. And it goes back to the point that user-friendly devices must be developed for women as a necessity, not a luxury. And when women's health and sex difference research need to be funded, not in a marginal way, but to be made central. And I end with a quote by Goethe, who says, "Knowing is not enough, we must apply. Willing is not enough, we must do." Thank you.
Women are different from men, women cannot do math, because their brains are different. And how can you make the case for this without, also kind of making research also focus on those differences? So, I mean, I think I have a kind of anxiety in that, because they like to do that. They like to say, well, women are the nurturers and men are the, hunters, and, all that kind
yes,
of
but,
research
yeah,
is just...
But those are sexist premises
right. That
orient the research. So it's
right. The
research question that generates the research.
Okay.
So if you say we're going to establish that women's bodies are smaller or that they're weaker and they're not as strong, then you will do research that is based on that hypothesis. So the questions themselves need to be asked anew. With an awareness and a consciousness of a sense, I wouldn't say of equality, but a sense of parity. So if you find that some women are weaker, you should be so secure that you can accept that. But you find some things in men are weaker, you should be so secure you can accept it. It's not either or. So the research questions themselves are issues that need to be re-examined.
And that should really filter throughout the entire study design. So, really when you're looking at sex differences, it's not an issue of better for one group or one group is superior over the other, but you are asking whatever the research question might be. I mean, it could be, how do patients respond to behavioral interventions for Alzheimer's, for example. And then you would power your study. You would put a sufficient number of both men in the trial and women in the trial, test your intervention, and see how they respond. And there may be reasons or drivers for how, there may be some ways in which they respond in a similar way, there may be some ways in which they respond in a different way. And I think that, in the discovery of looking at sex differences research, we can better enhance personalized medicine because we'll be able to say, we will no longer second guess and say, oh, this drug is right for everybody or this intervention is right for everybody, because there will be nuances that will be need to be applied, because the study question itself is asking, how do humans respond, or how what's the best therapy or what's the best diagnostic, so to speak, for both women and men. And this is also why we would encourage men and women to be in this area of sex differences research, because it's just as paramount and important for women as it is for men. So I hope that answers the question of...
Well, yeah, I mean, I support totally that, you know, women's bodies are different from men's body, and I don't like the idea that we're just kind of, you know, getting whatever medicine works for men and just trying to apply it to women. I'm just saying that there's also this whole attack on women in terms of you're different, so therefore we're gonna discriminate against you in the workplace and the, you know, et cetera, because your body functions differently. And I'm just asking, like, how we can still, you know, distinguish women's bodies from men's bodies, as well as also keep that equity or equality argument going.
And I think
that's really hard, I think.
Right, and I think very much this the research design needs to be set up in such a way that would provide that framework to answer that type of question, so that you can really be able to go forward and say that, you know, even in a situation of special accommodations, you know, even things like lactation, I mean, women breastfeed, I mean, you know, these are things that you need. And why is that important? And why would that validate why an investment in something like that? Because there are biological advances to for the fetus, for the baby, if you do these sorts of things. So, but I think you have to be really careful about where judgment is placed, because then you get into that arena of value-based assessment, and that oftentimes, and that usually is not based in any science.
That's true.
Just to say the way you define strength is also an issue to be questioned. What is strength? Is strength nurturing, or is strength lifting up 10-pound weights? So you have to sort of look at every single thing in the way the language is structured, the way it is put together. You have to really be conscious about this. So, you know, whatever strengths women have are seen as weaknesses, and whatever strengths men have are seen as strengths. So those are issues that constantly have to be reimagined and restructured.
You're always putting males as a standard.
Yeah.
That's also another thing, is that we're always referring to women,
right,
compared to men.
Mm-hmm.
And if man is the standard, and then we have...
Forget about what they say.
The
just do what you're
doing doing that is that there are medications that are prescribed for women based on
male
clinical
studies.
Trials that were only done on men. And when the women are prescribed those medications, they have serious side effects. You can die from a dose of propranolol that was based on clinical trials on women. You have to separate out the research.
Okay. Next.
I'm trying to formulate this question because it's mostly fascinating, but I agree with you that agency is important for women. I also agree that women researchers also need to be retrained. And I'm saying this because I just did my dissertation 10 years ago on looking at African-American women's health-related physical activity participation as it relates to heart disease,
mm-hmm,
diabetes,
mm-hmm,
and obesity. And I had 5 women out of 6 people on my dissertation committee, and I really had to fight to do a qualitative study because they said it has to be quantitative. And I said, but I want to hear what these women have to say. Not only that, I chose to look at women who were already participating in physical activity because I said there's enough research on, well, this is negative, they're not doing this. I wanted to look at the women who were participating and how they managed to overcome what was going on and what we could learn from those women to then try to work with other women. But it was a real fight to try to get that idea across. And I wanted to know what you
Well, first of all, the first area of keeping you within the paradigm are PhD committees.
Mm-hmm.
because these are the people who are the carriers of the paradigm and who want you to conform and who do not, although you're supposed to be something creative and original, that's very unlikely it's going to happen. So you get a PhD if you can nail your head to the desk and just slog away, okay? So it's not anything romantic or creative or innovative, I'm sorry. So that's one of the, so the kernel, the front line of keeping innovation away are PhD committees, okay? They don't really encourage you to go off of the paradigm. Secondly, one of the things that's interesting about the rise of feminism and gender studies is that they've advocated for subjectivity to be a part of scientific knowledge, to generate knowledge based on subjectivity. So the argument of what is objective and what is subjective has come into play as a philosophical discourse. So when I teach a class, for example, I say that my grading is subjective because the presumption is that there's an objectivity out there, and that is not the case. So I think that to fight, my response is two part. It's the carrier of the paradigm that we have to shift. So it's not just about, for example, women scientists becoming scientists. It's about a revolutionary shift in the paradigm itself. And we can't have that until we retrain the person who is going to be overseeing your dissertation. I'm hoping that if you oversee somebody's dissertation yourself, that you will not be doing this.